Hello, longtime loyal listeners and brand new selfies. Misty here, popping into your feed with an announcement and a special request. Whether you are brand new to the podcast or you've been with us since the beginning, Lisa and I want to get to know you better. To that end, we've put together a short survey that will help shape the future of Go Help Yourself. You can find that survey at bit.ly/ghysurvey or at the top of our homepage at gohelpyourself.co. The survey should only take about 5 minutes, and your answers will help us improve GHY and create new offerings to better serve you. Plus, as a token of appreciation for completing the survey, we're giving away 3 different prizes: a custom book bundle, a private meet and greet with both of us, and a one-to-one coaching session with me. Your feedback is invaluable and your opinion really matters to us. Lisa and I will personally be reading all of the responses and we cannot wait to learn more about you. So if you have 5 minutes, please fill out the survey at gohelpyourself.co or bit.ly/ghysurvey. It will only be open until June 30th. So if you want to help shape the future of Go Help Yourself, the time is now. And from the bottom of our hearts, thank you for being the best part of this podcast. Okay, on to the episode. Bum 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 bum. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Go Help Yourself, the comedy self-help podcast to make life suck less. I said the comedy self-help podcast.
It may
of A.
be the
I think it should
comedy
be.
Self-help oh. podcast.
But I think instead of A, it should be the. It is the comedy self-help podcast to make
it's
life suck
internet.
Less.
It's the internet. You can say whatever you want, and it's true.
As you might be aware, I am Lisa Linke, and my co-host, Misty Stinnett, is right across from me, and we're in New Digs, everybody. We are at Third Wheel Studios, which is a podcast studio in LA, not too far from us because, unbeknownst to us, a full demolition of a house and a garage happened 2 doors down from us starting this week.
So, yeah, we normally record in our home studio because after almost 300 episodes, we decided recording from home would be helpful. But here
but
we are.
We're here, and we're super excited. We have an exciting guest today, but I'm going to hold off on that and make that a big reveal.
Yeah.
And just to welcome you, if you're a longtime loyal listener, one of our LLLs or selfies, we love you. We're excited to have you back. If you're a new listener, oh my gosh, what a treat you're in store for today. We are a podcast that covers popular and maybe sometimes not so popular self-help books. Mm-hmm. We talk about all things self-help. We look at articles, trivia. We have thought-provoking questions,
we
which
sure
we
do.
Lovingly call Je Provokes.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll probably have some of those today, is my guess. And we often talk to authors and other esteemed guests, which brings me to today, Misty.
Yeah, I'm super excited for today. So we have a very special guest joining us on a topic that I don't know that we've actually ever covered.
Just
this topic.
Crazy.
In our 280 some odd episodes. I'm really excited. So before we let our guest speak, because I think we should just sort of energetically sense him first, let me tell you about our special guest, Bill Burke.
Yay.
So Bill Burke founded the Optimism Institute in 2022 after an extensive media and sports career as an executive, writer, and producer. Bill served as CEO of the Weather Channel companies after several years at Time Warner / Turner Broadcasting System, where he was the founding general manager of Turner Classic Movies before going on to become president of TBS Superstation.
Wow.
So he's unsuccessful. He's not well known.
And not smart.
That's right. Additionally, for 15 years, he was the co-owner and chairman of the Portland Sea Dogs, the AA minor league baseball affiliate of the Boston Red Sox.
Go Sea Dogs!
Thank you. As a writer, Bill co-authored Ted Turner's top 10 New York Times bestselling autobiography, Call Me Ted, and later co-wrote, produced, / directed Live Another Day, an award-winning feature-length documentary on the bailout of the U.S. auto industry. Bill is a lifelong optimist. He has to be. He's a Detroit Lions fan. And launched the Optimism Institute with a mission to inspire people with an optimistic, hopeful vision of the world and its future. And to that end, Bill is also the host of the Blue Sky Podcast, a weekly podcast featuring inspiring leaders, authors, researchers, and big thinkers who are taking on some of our world's toughest challenges with an infectious sense of optimism. Bill, welcome to the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I need to tighten up that bio, I think.
That's, no.
That was a lot. But thank you very much.
It's all good stuff.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I just want to dive right in, Bill, because you are sort of the, by proxy, kind of the resident expert on optimism. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment?
I suppose. You know, it's called the Optimism Institute, and you're speaking to the entire institute. So the name is somewhat tongue-in-cheek. but I've always felt myself to be an optimist, and I've actually learned quite a bit about it since, mostly from all the different interviews I've done and the interesting people I've spoken to. So I don't know if there's such a thing as an expert on optimism, but I'm doing what I can.
The expert, the resident optimism enthusiast.
There we go.
So, Bill, given your career in television and media, what brought you to found the Optimism Institute?
Yeah, so my wife and I were lucky enough to be part of a year-long fellowship, an academic fellowship at a university where we were brought together with 45 other people, sort of mid-late career, sort of third act kind of thing, trying to figure out what they wanted to do to have a positive social impact on the world. And so we had people working from all over the world, fascinating people from, you know, Latin America and from Asia and, you know, you name it, they were there. So that was very fulfilling. And people were going off working on climate change and homelessness, all really important challenges that we have. And I got this idea that one of our biggest challenges is, frankly, a sense of doom and pessimism. And, you know, the next generation is going to be worse off than the one before. And my children are in their late 20s and, you know, they have friends who say they won't have children, not because they just don't want to have children, but because they don't want to bring children into the world that's going to end in 30 years because of climate change. And so surrounded by these things, I felt like that's an issue that I could try to put a small dent in. And I've always been by nature an optimist. I'm also a history buff. I was a history major in college. And I interviewed a guy named Kevin Kelly who said, if you only read the news, you'll think things have never been worse. But if you read history, you realize things have never been better. And that is really a lot about how I view the world, that we continue to make progress. And we make progress because we stay optimistic, but we're not naively optimistic. We realize that there are challenges out there. And to be a true optimist, you have to get off your duff and do something about it.
Yeah.
So long way of saying that's how I got to this. I love storytelling. The opportunity to write the book with Ted Turner really got me into that part of my career. As you all know, podcasts can be a lot of fun. It's very accessible. anyone can do it, as I'm certainly
but
proving.
But should anyone do it?
How
should
dare
anyone
you?
I didn't
do
say
it?
They should, but they can. They may. Anyway, so yeah, so I started, my first podcast was in March of 23. I've done about 60. I'm nowhere near as many as you all have done, but it's been
That's
fascinating.
Great.
I've really enjoyed it.
Congrats.
That's amazing. And I think you're being humble by saying you did a year-long program at a university. I believe that was Harvard. Is that right?
It was Harvard, yes. Yes,
it was Harvard. Harvard.
You're the first person I met who didn't drop that. Congratulations.
The H-bomb, they call that.
That's amazing. And I just on a side note, is this program only available to folks kind of mid-late career, like you were saying?
Yes. The one of the screens is, well, you could be young or younger than I, certainly. 20 years of leadership experience minimum.
Wow.
Amazing.
So this was, I mean, there was a woman who's a former vice president of Panama, a woman who was the former defense secretary for Bulgaria, woman who was a police chief in Dallas, you know, just this crazy range of people.
Incredible.
And yeah, it was amazing.
That's amazing. I'm going to put that on my calendar, a calendar appointment.
Yeah.
10 years from now.
Yeah.
Exactly. Apply.
Apparently you've had 10 years of leadership experience.
Whoa.
Had at least 6 months, Lisa. I'm well on my way.
Don't argue in front of the kids.
This is lovely. I'm so excited that you're here. And I'm happy to talk to you about optimism because my friends often call me the optimistic nihilist, which I feel is, I mean, you know, I get happy about things, but on the whole, it's very
bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why does optimism matter? And do you think as this is a self-help podcast, do you think it's important for our well-being? And if so, oh my God, am I screwed?
No, I absolutely think it's important for our well-being, okay. or at least it's helpful in improving our well-being. And there's that's not just me. And if it were just me, you shouldn't listen to it. There's a lot of actually hard research on that. In fact, I interviewed someone earlier today who's written a book called The Biology of Kindness. Mm-hmm. And in there, they talk about the five values that are key to well-being. One of them is optimism. And depending on how you define an optimist and measure them, they live longer lives. They are more resilient. They respond, same thing. They respond to setbacks well. And they adapt to change. So they're adaptable. One of the things that this person emphasized with me was that she said, I'm a Darwin fangirl. Charles Darwin, we remember survival of the fittest, you know, the strongest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she said, it's really kindness actually played a role, and it's survival of the most able to adapt and cooperate. That's how the human species evolved sort of above, if you will, other species, because of this ability to cooperate, to be adaptable. So in our daily lives, optimism is a huge stress reducer. You can lower your blood pressure. Truly, there's a bunch of these physical measures. I think that you're obviously a fun person to be around, but in some ways, people sometimes respond to optimists. A lot of leaders have that as a character. Someone I interviewed said, I always challenge people to show me the list of history's great pessimists.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Nostradamus seems up there.
Well said.
Yeah.
a lot of negative things coming.
Yeah. So I'm biased, but I think there are a lot of benefits to it.
That's great.
And it can be self-fulfilling in that I try to make a conscious effort to look around for good things happening. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Partly it's my job. But it's amazing how if you walk down the street and look around and look for people being kind to each other, being good, you know, when someone drops a grocery bag in the crosswalk and five people run over to help them, or a stranger wants to pet a stranger's dog, you know, there's a ton of it. And our brains are actually wired to detect and dwell on exceptions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's an evolutionary thing.
Negativity bias.
Yeah. Or also even just what's bright and flashy. And we talked about that in Smart with Dr. Sood, that mm-hmm. when it's something that's unique, we're driven by that.
And yep. Negative is unique.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. It's not the norm.
Yeah. That's right. But to your point, you know, knowing that our amygdalas are wired to really, that's sort of our alert system in the brain to say, well, what is the modern day version of a tiger that's about to jump out of mm-hmm. the woods at me?
Right.
To recognize, like, okay, we're wired this certain way.
Yep.
But we can maybe take steps to train ourselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Out of that, or to habituate ourselves, kind of like you were saying, noticing the optimism
right.
in the world, or the good in the world. Are there any specific ways that you have helped train yourself to be more optimistic? Were you always optimistic, or did it change over time?
Yeah. The second part first, it's a little bit of both. I had the brooding childhood at times, and the awkward teen years and all that. I was stunned to find out, it was only about 3 or 4 months ago, we were moving my mom into an assisted living, and my sister's going through her stuff. And I never kept a copy of my senior yearbook for whatever reason. Mm. And she had one, and my sister's like, I think this was your year, right? And she hands it to me. And so, of course, I go to the senior stuff in the back, and they had the polls, you know, most likely to this, that, and the other. They had class optimists. Me and Moira.
It was
Moira.
You.
Me and a young woman named Moira. And I actually got,
well,
like,
what's Moira doing
Moira,
now?
Moira, come on the podcast.
Yeah, no, so it was bizarre. And I don't even remember it. So obviously, people thought
a little
I was
bit
an optimist
baked in
when I was 18, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But in terms of especially doing this work, a few things. One, like I said before, sort of changing your lens as you go through the world and be actively looking for positive things happening. I have changed my social media habits significantly. Mm. I'm not going to lie and say that I'm spending a lot less time on social media. I'd like to, but I've cleaned up my feeds. And just as just as these algorithms can spin you down into dark places, they can spin you up into much more positive places. So if there's someone you follow and they keep posting things that just don't make you feel great, it's like, why are you doing that? Unless it's unless it's really actionable information, why do that? I was having people pop in my feeds and I was like, well, I don't even follow that person. Then I realized they're in my feed because my friend follows that person. It's like, well, shoot, maybe I got to block my friend, you know, but it truly helps. It's I've used this analogy before, but when you're in the market for a car, say, or, you know, a big purchase, all you see are cars, right? The only commercials you watch are for cars. And it's like that when you're looking for positive things. And the kicker is nowadays you'll also see ads for cars in your feeds.
Yes. Because like you've said the word car.
Same thing.
Now that you've said the word car, I'm only going to get Jeep ads or something.
Dare me to yell, hey, Siri. No, sorry.
Yeah.
It cleans up your feed, and that it can be, the internet can actually be a remarkably pleasant place.
Oh, listen, you're talking to somebody who absolutely numbs out on TikTok with dog videos and is thrilled to be doing it because there's a lot of joy there.
Right.
A lot of baby animal videos and things. Well, you know, there's this a phrase that I've heard used a lot lately is, you know, you have like your diet in the sense of the nutrition that you eat, but you have your content diet, right? Like, what are you ingesting? Right.
I'm ingesting a lot of cat videos.
That's right. That's
no,
right.
And I think that's a great analogy. And I think that, and I have my beefs about the business models of Facebook and Twitter and all that.
Sure, we all do.
At the same time, and we can blame them for things that we probably should, but we're also letting it happen. So to use your analogy about food, I hate blue cheese. You can't make me eat it. I won't eat
it.
If you serve it up to me, I will not eat it.
Challenge accepted.
But these social media sites will serve up garbage to us and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Right.
And
yeah.
So a lot of it's on us. And that's one of the reasons I like to talk about this, because I think we tend to play the victim sometime. And really it's like, you know what? There's a lot we can do about this.
That's true.
Yeah. And it does, unfortunately, folks are so smart in these media companies and know how to grab our attention and kind of hijack our focus. Old school brains. I mean, we have like, our brains are not evolving at the rate that the world is becoming more complex and advanced. Right. So we have these like old school kind of operating systems in our brains that are easily hijacked.
Easily hijacked. Speaking of easily hijacking, I'm hijacking to ask you another question. Bill, are there any potential downsides or inadvertent affects of being overly optimistic? Yes.
No, if you're so, and maybe it pushes the boundary of my definition of optimism, but if you get optimistic to the point of just completely unrealistic, right? Well, I'm optimistic I can make it across the highway in enough time before that truck. I mean, that's an extreme example, but that sort of thing, that sort of, then it can bleed into what's been called toxic positivity too.
Yeah.
Yes. Like the last thing you want to say to someone who's just had a terrible cancer diagnosis, don't worry, everything's going to work out.
Look on the bright side.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That, again, I think that stretches the definition that I would give optimism, but I think people can see, well, I'm an optimist, I'm sure it's going to work out. That to me is not helpful. So there always has to be an element of realism. I like to use, you know, when JFK said, we're going to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade. Some would have said that's not even realistic.
Yeah,
I would say that was optimistic. And that was a leader painting a vision that was optimistic that made people want to strive towards it. You know, if he'd said, we need to put a man on the moon in the next 6 months, right? So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I think it can go the wrong way.
I have a quick follow-up. It's more of a statement to see what you think about it. So it sounds like with the work that you do, and I've listened to some episodes of your podcast, I'm going to look for sea kelp cubes.
Oh, there you go.
Protein shakes really good. Very soon. The work that you're doing, that optimism takes work in the world that we live in. And so it's kind of a deliberate seeking out of things to be happy about and feel good about.
Yes.
While also realistically acknowledging that there are some problems right now that we don't know how to solve, mm-hmm. that are impacting billions of people, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah.
And it, you got it totally. And if we, one of the reasons I think this is really important is if we let those problems feel so insurmountable that we give up and we lose hope, then we really are screwed.
Yeah. Right.
But as long as we still think about solutions, work on solutions, stay active, stay involved, then we have a chance. And that's one of the reasons I'm passionate about this, because when I see young people say, ah, we're screwed, the world's going to be gone in 30 years.
Yeah.
Right.
That's not a very good place to be.
I mean, it will be here.
Oh, boy.
So let's plan for it.
And what I'm hearing in that is that it's not necessarily optimism that we have the technology now to solve a giant problem, right. or that we have the frame of reference now, but this optimism of like, if we keep thinking about this, if we keep trying,
exactly.
we may find a way.
Exactly.
It's almost like that little ray of hope. But I wanted to circle back about toxic positivity because I've got my notes here. You know, I love to do research in my homework.
She's a research queen.
And for those of our listeners who haven't heard that term, or just to define it explicitly, according to Psychology Today, toxic positivity is the act of avoiding, suppressing, or rejecting negative emotions or experiences. Mm-hmm. So this always makes me think of the once popular saying, like, good vibes
only.
Good vibes only.
I just broke my leg. Good vibes only.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Put
that's
a crystal
negative.
On it.
Yeah. So they say that although setting aside difficult emotions is sometimes necessary temporarily, right, to get through the day or to function, denying negative feelings long term is harmful because it can prevent people from processing their emotions and overcoming their distress.
Yeah.
So how is optimism different than toxic positivity?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. Another way I've seen it used, or area, there's a great book called Radical Candor that's about more about workplace relationships. And
yes.
they talk about that, where it's like, no, you're doing a great job. No, that was a terrific presentation. And really you're thinking it was terrible. And I'm actually hurting your career because I'm not giving you the constructive feedback. While it's uncomfortable for me to do that, I'm actually helping you. So that kind of positivity is toxic. I think one of the things I really try to emphasize is that being optimistic, optimism and happiness are not the same thing. And I actually bristle at some of the the happiness literature. And you know, you guys are self-help aficionados. I think I think some of the happiness stuff actually puts us in a bad place, especially with young people who just assume we're supposed to be happy all the time. And if we're not, there's something wrong with us. And then I go on social media, gee, they're all happy on social media. All my friends are at a college that they like better than mine. So I must be the problem.
Right.
I have no sense that you're going to be happy all the time, that things are going to go your way all the time. It's more that time's medicine, things are going to get better, especially if I put an effort in to make them better. I think toxic positivity is probably closer to that unrealistic thing where it's just like you said, pushing away negative feelings or, yeah, of course I'm happy, even though you're really not.
Right.
That's, I don't know if I'm quite answering it directly, but that's how I see the difference, that optimists can sort of roll with on the roller coaster. It's not always...
That's a lovely way to put it, because what I'm hearing of what you're saying is toxic positivity kind of denies the full spectrum of the human experience.
Right.
And optimism is able to say, wow, things are terrible. Things are terrible. And yet
the sun will come up
tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe that I can, if it's a personal, crisis or something, I can move through this, or that I'll find a way to get support. I won't always feel this way. Or if it's a macro crisis, just like, well, we may not have the solutions yet, but hope is not necessarily lost yet.
Yeah. And Bill, you're kind of changing my worldview. And for that, it's like, ugh, thank you. But now I have to reorient everything. So thank you, Bill. But what I can feel it in my brain, everything is shifting, is that optimism sounds like a purposeful act versus a just state of being that some people have and some people don't.
Exactly.
And it's like random acts of kindness or random acts of optimism in that sense, like that it really is kind of a lifelong practice.
Yes. I believe it is. Again, it's so funny because it was today that I spoke with this woman. She said that the literature, the science is a little fuzzy on this, but they think, like a lot of things, maybe 30% of people are born sort of genetically optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But there's huge ways to move. You can move in both directions. You can be born optimistic and go in the other direction. But it absolutely can be learned. We know a lot more about neuroplasticity and how the brain can evolve.
Right.
And so again, I think the more you do, it's like going to the gym. If you lift enough weight, your biceps are going to get bigger. You know, if you consume enough positive, you actually can change. I can't stand the expression, is a glass half full or half empty, as a way of defining optimism. To me,
Why? First of all, that's not optimism.
That's just some weird positive thing, I guess. It's just some way of describing the glass. My feeling is an optimist would really enjoy that glass and go fill up another one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what an optimist would do when they saw it half full.
Yeah.
It's definitely an ongoing active thing. The other thing I would say when you talk about bad times, and it took me a while to talk much about this, but because I don't always like to personalize it, but you know, one of the worst things that happened to me in my life was about right before the pandemic, I lost a dear niece to cancer. She's 29 years old. It's just brutal, awful thing. I wish it hadn't happened. I wish she were still here. But one of the things I've tried to do is look back on that terrible experience and think, what positives can I pull from that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm absolutely a better person for having gone through that. I'm more empathetic. Mm. I understand when the pandemic broke out and people were giving people a hard time for wearing a mask, I thought, well, I had an immunocompromised niece. We wore a mask, you know, pre-pandemic. How do you know that person who's wearing the mask doesn't have someone at home like Annie?
Yeah,
you know, so
that's right.
I think we can, if we can take those terrible things that happened to us and try to pull out, you know, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I be a different and better person because of this? That's one of the true powers of optimism, I think.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that, Bill. And what I'm hearing is that optimism is a key component of resilience.
Mm. Absolutely.
And some of our listeners know this who have been listening lately, but I also lost someone to cancer recently.
Yeah.
39, my aunt gone way too soon. Yeah. And, you know, even in the face of caring for someone who's terminally ill, and I would say I'm a giant optimist. I am just like
annoyingly so.
Annoyingly so.
To me.
That's right to Lisa. And yet you keep me around.
I love you. I love you too.
Oh,
I just also want to be.
Fight it.
I won't.
I want to be the Grouch. She's Ernie and I'm Bert.
That's right. We're the odd couple. That's why the podcast works. There's something for everyone.
It's true.
I'm slowly incepting Lisa. But I've been reflecting, you know, knowing we were coming into this conversation, Bill, I've been reflecting on my own kind of, well, why am I so optimistic with all, and that's not the only loss I've experienced in my life that was absolutely devastating either, you know. I've been through some shit. And just thinking about it, I was like, what is it? And what am I wired for?
But maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline.
Yeah, maybe it's trauma-centered resilience. Who can know?
Whatever it is, I'll take
TM.
It.
But just thinking about that and realizing, like, I don't know if it's the sort of, like, the being confronted with, and again, this is maybe where the difference between optimism and toxic positivity, going like, yeah, life is short and we are all here for a finite time and we don't know if we get another go around. We don't know if this is our 15,000th, you know, go around.
I hope it's the last one. I can't do this again.
Or what? I know, I'm tired. I'm fine. You seem fine.
I feel great.
But yeah, just, you know, I'll stop waxing poetic, but basically just like realizing the finiteness of everything and just going like, you know what? Look at that sunset that's right in front of me. And I
that is misty to a T.
That is. And I'm not really asking a question here or saying something, but it's just thinking about optimism. But one additional thing I do want to add, I'm curious if the more that you have gone and looked for good in the world, and therefore, have you noticed that you are doing more good in the world since you are—
Put him on the spot.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you why I'm asking this question after you answer.
Yeah, well, my first answer is I hope and I feel like, because as you know, this is hard work. The podcast I put out every week is doing a lot more good than I've done in a while, probably, in terms of, and some of the feedback I get and notes, and that's like, that's everything for me. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I used to do, I hadn't thought about it this way, but thank you for asking. I used to do sort of bigger, if you will, like, you know, chair of the board of a health system in Maine,
right,
or, you know, that, mm-hmm, that sort of stuff, which is great. And I'm very proud of the work we all did in that. Where I think I'm actually a lot better is the really small micro acts of kindness. So, for example, had a little time to kill before here, went to Whole Foods, and the Whole Foods I go to is like a factory. The checkout lines are just insane. Speech, right, you know, and but they all wear name tags. And so I get up and they're just, and I'll say, "Hi, Misty, how's your day going?" And it's like,
yeah,
everything changes. It's, and I, so what time did you get started today? You're almost done, or you just get started? Oh, I've got a few more hours. You know, it's, I, and it's the 30-second interaction. I leave, I feel better. I think she felt better. You know, it's like little stuff like that. I do,
Bill,
like all day.
You're making it seem like I'm an optimist, but I think I'm just Midwestern, which means that any person I encounter, I immediately am like, how was your day? How are you doing? Can I help?
Can I see pictures of your dog?
My wife's from St. Louis. We went to college in the Northeast, and she got to school and she was waving at everybody.
Yep. And they were like, I don't know you. She was like, howdy.
Yeah. Yeah. She stopped.
But, yeah.
Well, they broke it out of her. Mm-hmm.
I ask this because I've been thinking about positive feedback loops a lot. Yeah. And so my question for you is really motivated about, you know, you start noticing good in the world, mm-hmm, and maybe it motivates you to do a little act of kindness. You know, like maybe if I go pick up my dry cleaning the next time, I'll say, you know what? Is there somebody with dry cleaning that's like $15? Let me pay for that. And I'll never see that person. I'll never get the credit. But this kind of virtuous cycle of feedback loops. And do you think that if we start doing small acts of kindness in the world and we start cultivating our own micro goodness, these little feedback loops, that we will then feel more optimistic?
Absolutely.
Hmm.
I just, you know, I could go, and I'm not making this about me, but stay with this example. I could go through that Whole Foods and be like, this place is a circus. This is so stressful. These people are going, oh God, this, they don't even look up when they're scanning your thing. And I watch some, you know, as you know, there's people in those situations who aren't particularly happy. Where when we lived in Maine, the Whole Foods parking lot was like a smash up derby. Everyone's driving.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And all amped up, right?
That's what Trader Joe's is here.
Yeah.
Monster truck driving over the cars.
Yeah. So I absolutely think if more people, you know, they wear a name tag for a reason, I assume. And it's not just to say, you know,
it's
hurry
so
up,
so I can
Misty.
Point them out to why the manager, this, Bill.
Hey,
why
you.
Why is this taking so long, Misty? It's an opportunity to say hi, you know, or like, I don't know if you've ever been to places, I think I do this at Disney, but a lot of, sometimes restaurants, they'll have, you know, it'll say Lisa and then it'll say, you know, where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they do that? Well, it's just a little icebreaker. Oh, my wife's from St. Louis, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Those little things, it sounds really hokey and you
it
know,
doesn't to me, but I am from the Midwest.
Yeah. No, think about it.
Yeah.
I have a question to follow up on this, which is I'm sitting here trying to think of optimists that, and I'm really coming up more with leaders. I'm thinking of the Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who was clearly an optimist in the face of crushing systemic
oppression.
And so I guess my question is, how do we remain optimistic in the face of structures, infrastructures, cultural ideals, norms, capitalism, where a lot of it is not set up to benefit everyone?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And not
absolutely
that you need to answer this for the world.
Or like, is optimism a privilege?
Listen.
This is why she's my partner,
because she
says great stuff like that.
No, and Misty's hitting on, you know, my biggest one of the things I'm most aware of approaching this work is, you know, my background, the privilege I've had, you know, people say, of course you're optimistic. You're a white guy who's done well in business.
Who went to Harvard for a year.
Yeah, exactly.
How is that, by the way? Is it nice? No.
What's that like?
Fantastic. Don't tell him. Yeah. No. So I'm so glad you mentioned Martin Luther King, because he's always one of my favorite examples. Think about what his life was like, and right. then being able to say, I have a dream. I've been to the mountaintop. I may not get there in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And so think about
when you're an optimist, do they kill you for that? Like, is that what
sometimes
happening?
Is a sometimes.
Okay. And I mentioned JFK before too. So right. But at the same time, also think about, as awful as the problems we still have around race in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can't be denied that we've made progress since Martin Luther King's time. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So that's I think where you come back to is, yes, these things are, many things are still set up against us. You know, I gave a talk. I was really fortunate because it helped me crystallize my thoughts. A friend asked me to give a speech at a high school graduation last year. And I thought about, okay, you're 18 years old. You're looking at this old guy and you're thinking, your generation left us with the biggest pile of junk and thanks a lot. You know, and I said, well, okay, fine. But welcome to the club. Every generation does that to the generation that comes after. And I thought about when I was sitting in my high school graduation chair, we had apartheid. We had, you know, the Cold War was raging. You know, we were boycotting each other's Olympics. I graduated in 1984. George Orwell was hopelessly pessimistic. 84 was not as bad as he said it was going to be.
It was a great year for movies. I'm going to be real.
We had AIDS. We didn't even know what it was. And I said, you can blame us for climate change. Fine. But when I was graduating from high school, the environmental concerns were the ozone layer and acid rain.
Mm-hmm.
We
don't
have
even hear about acid rain anymore.
Every single one of those.
Yeah.
In the years right. since I graduated from high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my point to these young people was, it didn't just happen. We cured AIDS because researchers got off their duffs and did something about it. We cured the ozone layer because we got rid of fluorocarbons. And we did something to fix, apartheid. We divested from South Africa. So yes, there are all these awful things happening still, but history is progress. And if we stay optimistic and stay active, we're going to keep making the world better than it was for the generation before. That's my story. Yeah. I'm sticking to it.
I love it.
And on that note, you brought up history in the beginning of our podcast as well. It sounds like if we take a shorter term view, which is subjective, right? That might be 10 years, that might be 50 years, shorter term view. It feels very bleak. I'll just speak from my own experience right now. It feels very bleak, the things that are happening. But like you said, if we zoom out to a larger patch of history, right? A larger section, say 300 years or longer, it tells a different story. So would you say that optimism or cultivating optimism or how we're viewing our current kind of state of affairs is just a matter of perspective, of sort of zooming out far enough?
I think that's a lot of it. And also, it's very interesting. I had a fascinating, crazy smart guy on my podcast who did wrote a paper about how every generation thinks they're living in like the end of times. Every generation thinks
that's like the thing where they, if you go back and look, you can see for hundreds of years that people have said nobody wants to work anymore. Everybody just wants it.
The year 1000, the world's going to blow up. The year 2000, the world's going to blow up. You know, it's just it's part of how humans are wired. A, B, yes, I think today it's even worse because we keep reinforcing ourselves in these social media echo chambers. So I say this all the time. When people say this country's never been more divided than we are today, we fought a civil war and killed each other by the tens of thousands.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, so when Donald Trump was elected in 2016, I wasn't happy about that. But at the end of that year, there were numerous I found at least two prominent editorialists who said 2016 is the worst year in American history. I thought 1932 during the Great Depression was pretty rough. It's World
pretty
War
tough.
II was grim. I mean, it's like
That's right.
we just, and you said 300 years.
Mm-hmm.
World War II ended 80 years ago.
Yeah, that is.
I think my answer to your question was yes, if I remember your question.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, listen, I was never a history buff until college. I took a pass-fail class because
did you pass?
The guy, everybody, barely. Because he was such a great storyteller, right? And you need a great storyteller to invest in history. And so to that end, mm-hmm. being that you love history and you love being in stories, what story would you tell to our listeners if they have one thing that you want them to remember from this conversation today or about optimism? What would that be?
That's a great question. I hate to go back to something we've already covered, but I think it's really helpful to study people. They tend to be leaders because that's who gets written about. Mm-hmm, but Martin Luther King's example, when we think we're having a tough day or when we think we're oppressed or we think, when you look at John Lewis had his head bloodied crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge, you know, and then went on to have this very successful, wonderful career in Washington. If John Lewis and Martin Luther King can stay positive and optimistic and keep moving, and if they would not be satisfied with where the country is now, but they would sure feel good about the progress we've made, I would think. And so I think those are the stories that that are important, and that, again, if you only read the news, you'll think things have never been worse. But if you read history, you realize they've never been better.
That's great.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I think, you know, we'll wrap up here in the next few minutes, and I don't know that I necessarily have a question to add to this, but as you were just speaking, I was realizing there's some kind of relationship between dissatisfaction and optimism.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's sort of...
It drives...
Optimism is almost the reaction
necessity
to,
is the mother of invention. If I'm not dissatisfied, I won't want to make it better.
Yeah. Exactly. There's something there. I'm going to noodle on that.
Yeah. I think entrepreneurs are optimists by definition. And I hold up immigrants as the ultimate optimists. If you think about what it takes to get up and leave where you've been living, where you're from, go through the hardships that immigrants have to go through to get to whatever country it is that they're headed towards, with this idea that I'm going to actively make this better for me and my family. And I think historically, that's one of the reasons this country's been so optimistic, is because we have in the past been very welcoming of immigrants, and immigrants have built this country.
Bill, that reminds me, I'm going to send you a TikTok. There's a trend of children of immigrants, so first college grads of immigrants' families. They're giving their parents their cap and gown because they're like, this is really yours. And I just scroll and weep, and it's so lovely. So I'll send that to you.
See, and you send it to me, and then it'll help your algorithm.
Oh, listen, my algorithm is...
You'll see
TikTok.
More crying graduation chef's stuff in your social media.
Yes.
That's so beautiful. I had a whole body reaction.
I know, it's really lovely.
And I'm so moved. So Bill, I have two more questions for you before we wrap up.
Yes.
So you've talked about just sort of your everyday, how you cultivate optimism.
Yes.
What do you do on your worst days? Is there anything that you do kind of in the moment, or do you just let yourself be?
That's
you know, what
question.
Does that look like?
Yeah, I'd say let myself be. I do think meditation can be helpful. Prayer can be helpful, which I think there's a fine line between prayer and meditation, depending on how you do it. I think gratitude plays a huge role for me. As bad as things might be, again, going back to what I said before, you know, I don't have cancer. I still have so many things to be grateful for. That can help.
Yeah. A warm roof over my head.
Yeah.
In this moment.
I posted a quote from, who said it? Actually, Sam Harris.
Yeah.
And I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, just remember there are about a billion people in the world who would feel like their dreams have been answered if they could trade places with you today.
Probably more than a billion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, so, we just crossed 8 billion. Yeah.
When you think about that on your worst day.
Yeah. And at the same time, like we spoke about toxic positivity, not doing relativism, which is like, oh, well, people have it worse than me, so I shouldn't feel sad about the thing.
Yeah, no, that's
sad
not,
about.
Right.
I feel sad about this, but it could let be me worse. Notice the good things.
It could be worse, which makes me think, who is that 8.2 billionth person who like literally has it the worst on the planet?
That's right.
Let's spend the next hour talking about that. No.
You find them and bring them on the podcast.
That's what I'm going to do. Thank you.
Okay. So your podcast, the yes. Blue Sky Podcast,
yes.
which we'll link to in show notes. It's right below your thumb. Mm-hmm. So you've got dozens of episodes and conversations with guests like Steven Pinker, Kelly Corrigan, Dr. Richard Davidson, and many other authors, educators, and leaders across sectors like the Harvard.
Like the Harvard.
Like the Harvard, the UN, the Motley Fool, and yes. more.
Yes.
So my question is, in all of these deep dives, is there anything that particularly surprised you or stuck with you around this conversation about optimism and resilience?
Or you stuck in resilience there at the end?
I think they're linked.
No, I know they are. But I was going to answer that was more about optimism.
Well, maybe that answer is fine.
I can gracefully link them. I was struggling trying to figure out why. It was very obvious to me that as I started interviewing people, you start looking for threads or commonalities. And one that I kept coming across was this idea of, it's an overused expression, of being a lifelong learner, staying curious. Mm. And then I'm like, what does that have to do? I kind of get a sense what it has to do with optimism. So I interviewed Kelly Corrigan, and she has the Kelly Corrigan Wonders is the name of her podcast. So I talked to her about that. You're all about curiosity and wondering. And I said, I don't get this. All these people I interview, they're that way. They're lifelong learners. They wonder, they're curious. She's like, well, of course. She said, that's a fundamentally optimistic way to be.
Yeah.
There's always mm-hmm. more to learn. There's always more to know. There's always something you can ask someone everyone you meet can teach you something.
Mm. Yeah.
That surprised me. I did not go into this thinking that that would be a commonality. And now that I see it, it's
you can't
absolutely
unsee it.
One of the things that keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And that surprised me.
I totally
Steven
relate
Pinker
to that.
Hit on that too, with open discourse is really important, because if you're a true scientist, you realize that most of what you think is true is not. That
right.
There's still more to learn and prove and disprove.
Right.
And that's what gets you out of bed every day and keeps you
optimistic. And my mantra lately is, I don't know what I don't know.
Oh, mine is certainty is the evil of the world.
No, that's
right. Like, if I'm certain about something, I have no room to learn or change.
Right.
That's
the horrible part. True. Well, Bill, this has been such a lovely conversation. Thank you for coming on.
I enjoyed every minute. Thank you very
Yay.
Much.
Okay. Well, with that, everybody,
life is
abundant.
Go Help Yourself was lovingly recorded in Los Angeles, California, and by producers Misty Stennett and Lisa Linke. If you'd like to learn more about Bill's work, you can do so at theoptimisminstitute.com, and you can also listen to his podcast, Blue Sky, wherever you get your podcasts.
And with that, good luck with those positive feedback loops and cultivating optimism.
I'm still going to be negative sometimes.
I'm not.
Bye.
Bye.